Well, hello, dear friends and colleagues, and welcome to this next episode of Fire and Wire, where once again I'm joined by some of my fabulous colleagues from around this great collegiate university, two from the medical sciences and one more broadly running our development and alumni relations. And we're going to talk about all things development and philanthropy and just the importance of it, the challenges of it, the benefits it brings to a big research intensive and teaching intensive university. So I'm delighted to be joined by Liesl Elder, who is our Chief Development and Alumni Engagement Officer. She is responsible for philanthropic strategy and alumni relations across Oxford. She joined us in 2011 to lead the Oxford Thinking campaign. That was our last campaign, successfully increasing its target and concluding it with over $3 billion raised, which was a record-breaking effort at that time. Welcome, Liesl.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
And I'm also joined by Professor Sir Aziz Sheikh. He is a globally recognised primary care physician, epidemiologist and health data science leader. He serves as Pro Vice Chancellor without portfolio. He is head of the Nuffield Department of Primary Care Health Sciences and he's the Nuffield Professor of Primary Care Health Sciences here at Oxford. Great to have you here, Aziz.
Great to be here, Aini.
And finally, but not least, we have a wonderful Professor Cathy Cressel, who is Director of the Oxford Centre for Emerging Minds Research. We'll get into that momentarily. Cathy is a British clinical psychologist and international expert in developmental clinical psychology, specialising in the causes, maintenance and treatment of anxiety disorders in children and young people. She is the Paul Foundation Professor of Developmental Clinical Psychology in the Departments of Experimental Psychology and Psychiatry. Cathy, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
What made you want to become a fundraiser, Liesl? And just tell us a little bit sort of how you got to this place here and some of the joys and challenges in your current role here at Oxford.
I came to the UK in 2004 as part of a wave of North Americans who were brought over to run British development offices. So I started at Durham, went to Edinburgh. Aziz, all the best people have worked in Edinburgh, I think. and then was asked to come down to Oxford in 2011 for the Oxford Thinking campaign. Continues to be interesting and a fantastic university to be a part of. So every day keeps me interested and keeps me challenged.
Well, we're thrilled to have you. But it's interesting your point you make about the fact that we had to recruit American development officers. Why do you think there was, and there still is, a gap in the quantity of universities in the UK compared to the US that have development officers and are doing a lot of philanthropic fundraising?
Well, I have a pet theory about this, and I think part of it has to do with the history of the funding for higher education in the two countries. And if you look at the United States, there are many, many more private universities. If you think about the history of the United States and westward expansion, if you were starting a new town in Ohio, you had to start a school, you had to start a university, and it was often started privately. There wasn't government funding for such things at the time. And so there are many universities and colleges in the U.S. that have been fundraising for well over 100 years, because they had to from the very beginning. And so there's just much more of a tradition, I think, that's inculcated in the alumni population that you should look after your university and you should fund it. So it's a bit of a habit, and it's a cultural habit, but it's not something I think that's inherently American to give to universities. I think it's something that people have been taught to do.
Yeah, well, we can get back into that because I do think it's something, whilst we do very well and several universities are certainly improving, you know, their philanthropic, you know, annual fundraising, there's a lot of headroom,
yes.
I think, for the UK, which, you know, we
very
can get back
so.
To sort of the need and its importance, you know, in terms of funding gaps and challenges, you know, for the headwinds that all the universities are facing there. Well, Aziz, let's turn to you now because you're a primary healthcare physician. You're obviously an educator and scientist. What drew you into being a primary healthcare physician and wanting, what lured you to Oxford in the end?
Obviously, I knew a lot about Oxford. I've collaborated with a number of colleagues who had the privilege of working with them over several decades. So knew the extraordinary talent pool that we have here. Health systems across the world face very similar challenges. And so as I was doing more and more global work, that convening power that Oxford has is pretty extraordinary. The ability to have conversations across the world was a major pull.
Yeah, so for this next phase sort of what you want to achieve. Well, we'll come back into that and how philanthropy can help realise, you know, the great vision and ambition you have for the department. Cathy, can you tell us a little, can you give us some hope about, you know, where we might be going in terms of interventions that might be beyond, you know, drug-based or other types of therapy-based or even just behaviour changed?
Well, a lot of our work is focused on psychological interventions, so talking therapies, where we work a lot with parents of younger children. We work directly with adolescents. And we have seen a real uptick in the effectiveness of those interventions as we've got a better and better understanding of what the core mechanisms are that keep these common mental health problems going. And I think in terms of the hope and optimism, a lot of the work we're doing at the moment is very much about how we can increase access to those psychological therapies, because we do have therapies that work really well. We just need to make sure we're reaching people. And here in Oxford, you know, there's been a tradition that we've been able to build on of really developing a highly effective digital therapies that more people can access with remote support from a clinician. And we're now in a position where work that we've done in that vein is being rolled out widely in the NHS outside of research. So I think we have some really good interventions already, and where we're really pushing forwards is really trying to increase the reach of them here in the UK, but also actually more recently globally as well.
So just thinking about the international bit, you know, could maybe you talk a little bit about how philanthropy's changed over the years, particularly working in developing countries? You know, there's always been goodwill to go and do good and do research in places where we need to understand infectious disease or other aspects. But it's been quite a sort of zoom in, zoom out approach. You know, you could argue quite an imperialistic attitude to it. I've seen that change over the years in philanthropists and donors wanting to do things differently, and the university as well, where we really are minded about the importance of building that critical mass and that, you know, sustained ability for where we're working with to continue the work. Could you maybe just give us a flavour about your international work and how philanthropy has aided that and how it looks now?
So I've had the privilege of discussing this with colleagues across Asia, Africa, many parts of the economically developing world. And what the concern has been is that, I mean, typically these are academics coming in from high-income countries, in effect telling the researchers what to do. The work is done, it's delivered, it is often to a very, very high standard, it's important work. But then so much of the time the academic spoils are received by those coming from Western institutions. That's the first, the senior authorship positions, the recognition. What we're working towards is a much better relationship where actually we engage with those on the ground, ask them to identify what the needs are, what the priorities are, and support those colleagues in actually delivering that work. And what we're doing simultaneously is also academic capacity development.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you said, that capacity building is essential. And I know that we're working hard to do that, you know, as a university. And it's very much part of our strategic plan to have that we do it very much, you know, together in partnership, listening a lot more and then implementing. Now, Lisa, maybe I could turn to you about sort of the challenges when one wants to support work like that and it's shift in how we do things. And we're very fortunate to have extraordinary donors who are, you know, very, very generous and very flexible in recognising that, you know, what we need and where to do it. But it's not always easy. Tell us a little bit about how you find that and how you go about trying to make sure we can get the funds in to do the work that Aziz needs to do.
I would say that I tend to start from a position of goodwill and of partnership, because, I mean, I think you can hear from Kathy and from Aziz that these are issues that people care about. They're important for the world. All of us want to see them changed for the better. So there's a real opportunity for us to work together and in partnership. And I think it's short-sighted to think of donors as just a source of money. I mean, these are highly educated people. They've been very successful. They want to make a difference in the world. So our philanthropists see Oxford as a partner to help them make the difference that they want to make in the world and to make some changes. And so I think there's an opportunity for us to come together. There's always a negotiation because it might be that a donor has a particular view about what they want to do with child and adolescent mental health or global health. We have academic expertise, so we're bringing things to the table. And so there's an opportunity to think about where's that Venn diagram overlap? Where are those points of commonality where we can work together and both achieve our aims? It's always a conversation, and sometimes these conversations are complex and sometimes they're straightforward.
And part of the joy from my perspective, you know, whether I was when I was a department head or a college head and now obviously as vice chancellor, is you really do develop close relationships with these donors. They become part of the family. They really, you know, buy the purpose of what we do here and are passionate about, you know, what we're able to do in the world. And they become lifelong friends, which is a real joy. The counter argument is, well, you don't need the money. Why would I give it to you? I can give it to somewhere else. What in your impression is why people want to buy into excellence?
I mean, Oxford is a wealthy institution by comparison to some others, but we're a nonprofit. You will be well aware our funding is all tied up in very restricted ways in terms of delivering the research and the education that we need to deliver. So the capacity to do extra things is relatively limited, and donors enable us to add to that margin of excellence and do things that we wouldn't otherwise be able to do with the funding streams that we have. So it's quite an important income stream. If you really want to make a difference in the world, working with the most talented people in the world is a good way to do it. And so thinking about, you know, Aziz was speaking about the convening power of the university. And if we look at just our academic excellence across the board, Oxford's a pretty good bet. And I do think that if someone wants to make a difference in some of these areas, whether it's global health, child and adolescent mental health, any of the other areas, many areas that we're researching, investing in Oxford is a pretty good bet.
Yeah, no, the menu we've got of options, as you say, to select from, you know, across all the five divisions. Aziz, you support that sort of, you know, wanting to support and sustain excellence.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of the benefits of philanthropy are that it allows you to kind of invest in areas irrespective of whatever the kind of political headwinds or currents are. So, for example, I mean, obviously global health is under the spotlight at the moment, reduced investment from governments across the world. The need absolutely remains. So, I mean, having that resource available to us is incredibly important. I think also when you work globally and in global institutions like ours, what you recognise is that talent is absolutely everywhere. Opportunities are not necessarily everywhere, however. And so the more and more scholarships that we can give these talented individuals from across the world, the better, because they're going to go out and do absolutely fantastic things. And wouldn't it be brilliant if we could bring more of those young, creative, talented minds to our environment?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm totally with you on that one. I always said, you know, talent is everywhere, opportunity is not. We'll come back to scholarships when we talk a little bit about the campaign. But you've just managed to secure, through a very generous donation, an endowed chair, which again is a nice example of giving security for a position. Do you want to just explain a little bit about that? And then I'd love to turn to Cathy about your chair as well, because that's a beautiful story of another wonderful relationship with the donor.
We're incredibly fortunate that a family physician, originally from Tunisia, who sort of has been living in Canada, Dr. Sadok Bezroor, has decided to invest in creating an endowed chair of family medicine or primary healthcare and an associated centre. That introduction was by Professor Michael Kidd, who's in our department, is now serving as a chief medical officer of Australia. So, and we worked incredibly closely with Lisul and her team. And this work, what we hope will do is will catalyse academic primary care development across low and middle income countries. So many countries are making this transition. It's driven by the Sustainable Development Goal agenda, universal health coverage. This is the way to do this.
Fantastic. As you say, you know, securing brilliant talent, keeping it in Oxford, and then able to sort of change the world, you know, in all sorts of ways. And Cathy, I think you would agree with this, that, you know, whilst we've been fortunate that the government supported, you know, research funding and long may that last, and we're back in Horizon Europe, and, you know, we do very well in Oxford with research grants and industrial grants. You can do things different and more flexibly, you know, with a donation. But you've just become the Paul Foundation Professor of Developmental Clinical Psychology in the Department of Experimental Psychology and Psychiatry. Tell us a little bit about the foundation and this amazingly exciting centre that you've set up as an example maybe of doing something different at pace.
Yes, so we're really excited at the moment to be in the process of setting up the new centre called the Oxford Centre for Emerging Minds Research. And the centre is very much focused on doing the research that can help us create environments in which children can thrive. So whether that's in their homes, in their schools, in other places where they spend their time, really helping those around children and young people recognise their particular strengths and abilities, also recognise their needs, and then create environments that really suit those children and young people so that they can really reach their potential. And alongside that, where difficulties do start to emerge, particularly in relation to mental health, making sure we're able to identify those things early and intervene effectively. So the centre funding was a really substantial gift from the Paul Foundation and very much driven by Patrick Paul.
We should say it's 27 million, which is a really fantastically important gift.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so much that we are going to be able to do with it. It does include two endowed posts, which does mean we will have senior leadership in child and adolescent mental health and wellbeing research here in Oxford forever, which is quite incredible to add to the chair in child psychiatry that we have in the psychiatry department. But we also have funding for a wide range of other activities, including some specific research projects, but also a lot of funding for building capacity in this research area. Mental health itself has been underfunded compared to other areas of health. And then within that, funding for child and adolescent mental health has been particularly small.
And why is that?
I think traditionally mental health and mental health difficulties have just been talked about a lot less. I think traditionally people experience a lot of shame and stigma. I think we've moved a long way in relation to that. I think mental health is now much more widely part of the public conversation. And I think we've really seen in many areas how critical effective lobbying is when it comes to fundraising. And recently we've had a lot more prominent voices talking about the importance of addressing mental health problems. And I think that's really helping us move in the right direction too. But I think we've got a lot of catching up to do. So our centre was very much a result of the vision and the passion of Patrick Paul, who led the Paul Foundation. And when Lisa was talking, it really resonated because he was very much drawn to Oxford because he wanted to fund research that would make a difference to people really reasonably quickly. And I think he'd seen the pandemic response here at Oxford and the amount of activity that went on, how very quickly it was making a difference around the world, and thought, right, if I'm going to support research, this is where I want to do it.
Now, we're building up to a campaign. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the campaign? And Aziz was mentioning the importance of studentships and how that will lead into it.
So we are going to be launching shortly a new campaign for Oxford. It'll be a big one. It'll focus on Oxford's excellence. So the title of the campaign is Oxford Excellence, which enables us to really shine a spotlight on all the ways that this university is absolutely amazing and leading the world with our research, with our teaching, with our students, and to create a university and invest in a university that helps us take it into the future. So we've got to focus on the sorts of things that universities are interested in. So it's on graduate students, it's on endowing our academic posts. We've heard a little bit about that today. It's about investing in some facilities, particularly on the science side of things, to really reinvest in our physical plant so that we've got the best research facilities for our academics and for our students. And then a number of key strategic projects across the university. And it's for the colleges, it's for the university, it's for all of us together to be really celebrating this amazing university and inviting our donors in to help us continue this excellence long into the future.
Yeah, no, it's very exciting. And I know you've been working really hard with the team, for which I'm very grateful. And it'll sort of dominate the remainder of my tenure. But I love raising money because I love sort of seeing the fruits that it brings in terms of for every pound that you've raised, Liesl, we pretty much return on that investment another 10. So it also leverages the university so that we can really amplify what it is that we want to achieve at pace. And goodness knows there's enough global challenges to take on. So very much it's a campaign for all the divisions, from our medical school to our physical sciences to our humanities, social sciences, and our, of course, gardens, libraries and museums, because we look after some of the world's greatest collections, and all of that needs, you know, donations to support. Kathy, from you, sort of excitement around the campaign and what you'd like to see from it? And
yes, I mean, I think it is a really exciting campaign, and I think I agree. It's very much about making sure that our academics and as well as potential donors really understand the huge flexibility that can come with this sort of funding. We've heard obviously about how we can really support longevity of work in this area through endowed posts. We've also spoken about the capacity building areas where we can support studentships and fellowships and so on. And also there's great capacity to just be very responsive in the way that our sort of traditional funding routes, you know, often can be very slow and quite clunky, whereas actually you can just really see a need and address it quickly. So I think both for academics and for potential donors, you know, it just gives such a huge wealth of opportunities of things that can be done that can just make an enormous difference.
Absolutely. So just in closing, Liesl, you know, what can the government do? You know, we're doing lots, you know, for the world and the nation and the Oxford region. How can the government help us, particularly around the issue of philanthropy?
So I think that there's a lot that the government can do and that they are doing. So we've got the Office for Investment, which has a focus on philanthropy as well, which is very encouraging. I think the message that supporting British universities is important and is a good thing to do, it just helps that sense of legitimacy. I think it also helps some of the universities who also have, I think, a less well-developed fundraising function. So I think shining a light on it is very important, encouraging it, helping universities think more about philanthropy, and using that kind of platform that government has is particularly important.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, I hope that this episode of Fire and Wire has, you know, helped the listener understand a little bit more about just the mechanics of it and the joys that it brings and the impact that it has, and that in some way it can sort of spark maybe further discussions and enthusiasm for people to sort of get involved, and for anybody listening who would like to donate and support our Oxford excellence, we're all ears, so do get in touch with Liesl. But meanwhile, thank you all for listening, and look forward to speaking to you again when we do the next episode of Fire and Wire.